You're listening to the Salon Owners Collective podcast, where each week we share stories and expertise from business owners like you, plus experts, influencers, and Larissa's actionable steps that will transform your business and your life. And now your host, Larissa McLemon.
Hi, how are you? I really loved my chat with salon owner and educator Lorna Evans. She's from Melbourne, Australia, and her real life success stories and battle wounds have so much that we can learn from and be inspired by. Lorna talks about money, making a profit, team, and branding and marketing. So let's jump right into the interview. Lorna, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you along. You've been in the industry for a long time, which is a great thing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey in the hair industry?
So, well, I've been in the industry now for 33 years, so quite a while. I've been a salon owner for that for 26 years. So for 26 years, I have had my salons. I've now got two salons. At one stage, I did have three, but I'm very happy to have my two now. Mm-hmm. So in the past, basically, for about 17 years, I've also been a long hair styling educator. So I actually started I started with Matrix before they were even bought by L'Oreal, to be honest. And, so that just makes me feel really old, actually. So I've loved the education side of it. And I think, I think it really has gave me a little bit of diversity. So I live on the Mornington Peninsula, and so I'm not a big city salons. My salons are out of the city, so which is nice.
Which city is that in Australia?
We're in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, Australia. Okay, awesome.
So my salons really have really evolved over the years, to be perfectly honest, and I think that's because of the education business. Mm. So many people keep saying to me, are you going to keep the salons? I'm like, I wouldn't even dream of getting rid of my salons. I love them.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I take my hat off to you for having two salons and an education business. Like, I know that's not easy. I had two salons for a while and eventually went back down to one. So I know what it's like to run two, plus an education business. So I take my hat off to you. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Look, I think when it comes down to it, it is just time management. Everybody has got 24 hours in their day. It's just what you choose to do with it.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us a little bit about your education business. What does that look like these days?
Well, the education business is it's definitely where my passion lies. I love watching people that come into my classroom that, you know, feel so nervous that, that they just can't even use a bobby pin sometimes. So where it looks like is we basically run workshops, hands-on workshops around Australia. And I was actually over in New Zealand in March, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And so basically our workshops range from look and learn evenings to one-day classes, which I ran one in Melbourne yesterday. But really my favourite class is I run a four-day class, which has 3 days of hands-on workshop. So basically we do 3 days of on dollies, and then on the fourth day in comes the real live models. So it's quite a journey for, you know, I would say most of the people that come into that class have actually never even experienced being at a photo shoot, never mind putting a whole collection together. So it's so rewarding. We actually had two people in Sydney last week from New Zealand, from Wellington.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love that we're such a small world.
Yeah, me too. So, and then of late we've now just started an online program because, I mean, we have to, like everything, you have to go with what is happening in the world and, you know, podcasts, webinars, all of that type of thing is such an important thing for where all our businesses are going. So we're running a global webinar program at the moment, which has been such a different experience. It's been wonderful, to be honest.
Hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we've got people, we've called it the Global Webinar Program because, of course, being a webinar, you can actually join in from anywhere around the world.
Yeah.
I think we've got stylists from 8 countries around the world at the moment, which is super.
Well, well done. Good for you. You have part of your team from the salon. Do they work with you in your long hair education program?
Look, we actually did. Amber was actually, and is still on my education team, and she was in the salon for many, many years. But Amber has actually just branched out, and she is working part-time for one of the colour companies as a technician, but still is working with me as well. As they've actually allowed her to, she's actually working for Affinage, and they've actually said it's, you know, they support her to work with us as well, which is fantastic because the two team members that I have been with me for a long time, which is Amber and Kylene. Kylene's in Queensland and Amber's down here in Melbourne. So, and we work just amazing together.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really interested to hear actually about how you got started with the salon, but how do you actually spend your time between each of the salons and with your education? Like how does that, what does life look like for you in terms of where you spend your energy?
I'm a bit of a, you know, I must admit, probably around about 6 years ago, I decided that work-life balance was actually a really, really important part of life. I don't know why it took me so long to work it out. So my work life looks like I actually get up and go either for a walk or a run 6 days a week.
Yep.
And my gorgeous new little puppy, George, who we love to take with us. And my work life starts in the office, which we have a home office. Mm-hmm. And I'm at work by 9 o'clock. So 9 o'clock to me is walking down into the office. So I can actually make sure that I look after a little bit of my headspace first, which is nice. Yep. And then I have a list. So my list is, I'm just looking at it now. I've managed to cross off 7 things this morning. So I just
well done.
I start with list. And I catch up with my team on a monthly basis. We have a full meeting, and then on a monthly basis, I also catch up with everybody one on one. But I've also got an amazing manager who has been with me for, I think Kerry's been with me for 13 years this year, and she's not a hairdresser, and she goes between the two salons.
Right. And so she's in a full time management role for the salons?
No, she's actually only 4 days a week.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So she has some work-life balance too.
She does. No, she's absolutely fantastic. So we just bounce off each other very, very well. She lets me, you know, I think over the years you learn how to create systems. And I think systems in our salon has been really what has been the making of them. It's making sure that there is boundaries in place and our policy and procedures are really strong. You know, so to be perfectly honest, they always will need me, and I'm very, very happy about that. But I don't think anybody's irreplaceable.
And so you've put yourself in a position where you are not needed other than on a small scale. Like you always needed it a little bit, of course, yeah. I'm sure, but not on a daily basis.
Absolutely. My role in the salon is HR, and it is about making sure and education. So, you know, yes, styling is my education. And when I did my 1 day workshop in Melbourne yesterday, I had two of my girls. I've got, you know, they're always coming to classes. Mm-hmm. Colour in our salon is actually where we make the majority of our money, mm-hmm. Like most salons. And so we do a lot of colour training. We work very closely with Belinda Keeley from Chumba. Mm-hmm. So she does, I would say, the majority of our girls' training, but we have a really good, healthy training budget. We always put aside 3% of whatever our salons bring in for marketing and training. So that budget is there to, you know, make sure that they are getting outside their four walls, and we've got people coming in quite often. So education is a really strong part of how we run the businesses.
Yeah, great. Yeah, hugely important. Yeah. So of your years of multiple salons and also having stepped away from, not only away from the floor, but away from the daily operations, I'm sure you've got some better insight now looking back at the business at what works and what doesn't work. Does that give you a better overview of what needs to be or what needs to be done or what needs to happen versus when you are inside the business?
Yeah, I think it does. I think being able to what I love is when I turn up to the salon and I feel really proud, you know.
Yeah.
And there are times where, you know, little things will slip, and that's okay too. That's what business is all about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it has. It's allowed me to look at it as an outsider looking in.
I think it's a really important perspective to have, because otherwise, and I know it certainly happened to me a lot, is that you can be very inside your own goldfish bowl and see things from the inside, and you lose a bit of perspective and can become a little bit emotionally attached. I see this a lot with the amazing people I work with, but we can get a little bit emotionally attached to being inside our baby, if you will.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think one of the things that I find really inspires me is every time I have a new team member ever start, and we've actually just had to have three new seniors because, would you believe, I had three girls have a baby this year.
Yeah, I would believe. I had 14 babies in 4 years.
Oh, my God.
Well, not me, obviously, my team. I did have two of them, mind you. Yeah. So I relate. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, well, at the front of our policy and procedures manual, because I read our policy and procedures manual personally to everybody that walks in the door, at the front of it is a company story, and I think it's a really good thing that I do read it to them, because it makes you never forget that 26 years ago when we opened our business, it did not look like it looks today.
Yeah.
You know, we actually had an absolute nightmare opening our first business. And to be perfectly honest, I actually wasn't intending to go into business. I was only, I was 21. Mm-hmm. And my mum, I had actually just been overseas. I qualified as a hairdresser and then did what lots of hairdressers do and popped on the plane and off I went to the UK, and I worked for the Rainbow Room in Glasgow for 8 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had a fabulous time there, and then backpacked. And when I came home, my mum actually bought a little old lady salon called Hollywood Hair. Oh. And it had pictures of Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe on these wooden walls, and I had a pink hairdryer out the front. It was hideous. And I had gone back to work at the salon where I had done my apprenticeship. So, which would have been the biggest salon in town. And, of course, back then we had no mobile phones, and I called my mum from the salon at lunchtime and said, "How are you going?" And she said, "Get over here as soon as you possibly can." So I've headed over to the salon and I've opened the door up and I said, "Mum, your salon is busier than ours. You are absolutely bumping." And she said, "Yes, but no one's actually paying."
Oh.
And I said, "What do you mean?" And so the lovely gentleman that had sold my mum the business failed to tell her that he had sold 400 of these tickets for $60 that included a perm, a colour, a men's haircut, a ladies' haircut, children's haircuts, you name it. There was hundreds of dollars of services on this card. So obviously, she rang the solicitor, and the solicitor said, "You don't need to honour any pre-existing offers, but you try telling 400 people that."
Wow.
So, yeah, so that night, of course, my mum was beside herself, and I was, to be honest, I was a little bit itchy, and I'd been only home about 2 months, and she said, "Come into partnership with me. We'll call it whatever you want. We'll make it look like whatever you want." And I'm like, "I'm 21. But anyway, of course, I couldn't leave my mum. And so we headed in there, and the front page of the Leader newspaper was hair care ripoff. I've still got a copy of it to this day. And it was, you know, it was definitely a battle, but we really put in brilliant customer service. We couldn't obviously honour the free haircut or the free perm, as everybody walked 26 years ago had a perm as well. So what we did was we negotiated with the clients, and most of them understood. The ones that didn't understand, you can imagine the battles we had. But we actually would perhaps cut the hair for nothing, but they had to pay for the chemical service.
Yeah.
But to this day, Larissa, to be honest, we still have a lot of those clients.
No way.
We do. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So it certainly, and I would look at it, I think for the first 4 years, I would have earned less money than the apprentices in the salon. We were taking no money. And I think 4 years later, I remember saying to my mum, I'm either going back to work where I was or I have found this coach that I'd really love to work with and it's going to cost us this amount. So, and of course my mum's reaction was, well, we can't afford that. And I said, well, we can't afford not to. So that would be where I got my first business coach, and I don't think I've had three since, and I've never looked back.
Amazing. It's really intriguing, actually. Our stories are really, really similar. So I resonate with so much of that, apart from the mum. I didn't have a hairdressing mum. But I opened my business at 20. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And, you know, I was 20. You don't know much when you're 20.
No.
But I didn't know what I didn't know. So that was really good. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. And I sort of had this crazy idea parked at the lights one day when I looked at this empty salon. I couldn't find a business that I wanted to work in, you know, a good match for me. Mm-hmm. And I saw this place for lease that used to have a really well-known salon. And I thought, oh, I'll just do it myself. What a naive idea. And 6 weeks later I was open, and kind of lucky it went that fast, otherwise I could have talked myself out of it. But really interesting.
And it really is, and it's a great journey, because, you know, it's sort of the story of that, just our story just went on and on, because of my stepfather was supposed to, he's a carpenter and he started the renovations. We changed the name very quickly. Back then it was Spectrum, and we started renovating very quickly, but then he had a heart attack. And that sort of, so that dried up the renovations for a long time, and a few weeks, and then I think a lot of his friends stepped in and helped us out. So it was really quite a battle.
Yeah. But you learn a lot, right?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You learn the most in the trenches, I think.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
So I know you're going to share some of your wisdom with us today from those trenches. So tell me a little bit about budgeting and creating profit.
I would say that what I learned from my first coach was absolutely massive. And what he taught me was that my mum used to, the reps used to love it when they would come in and my mum wasn't in the salon. So if Alice wasn't there, they loved it, because, you know, back then when we were, of course, we were perming everything, the rep would come in. I remember one was showing me a deal on diffusers. I'm like, I think we need 24 of those. They'll look lovely on the shelf.
Because it's about looking good on the shelf.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. It's lovely. I had the most, you know, expensive taste. So what my first coach really, really taught me was about budgeting and about buying what I could afford. And that was a really big lesson, which I have to say that I have carried on throughout the years.
Yeah.
So, and there is a big difference between turnover and profit. Massive difference. Yeah. Massive. And I've met some hairdressers over the years. You know, I've been so lucky with, between Matrix and Redken. You know, I really managed, I've got such a lot to thank those companies for before I went out on my own, because, you know, I did get to do a lot of travel, particularly to the States. And I've met many, many amazing hairdressers that I've admired, a couple of them from afar, but they're financially, you know, where you would have thought their businesses were very, very strong, they had turnover and they didn't have profit. That's not very good for your lifestyle in the future. It's, you know, at the end of the day, at one stage or another, you know, we will retire, and, you know, it is not a hobby. I absolutely adore doing hair, but a hobby is something you don't get paid for, and that's not what we're here for.
I think the turning point for me, because I, like you, in the first several years, I paid myself $300 a week, which was like, I paid myself that for probably the first 5 years. And I was employing people that were earning six, I mean, this is years ago now, probably the same time as you, who were earning double that. And I think the turning point for me was realizing that unless I protected profit and made a profit, I wouldn't be open tomorrow for my team.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so I think I always had a bit of a money block around, you know, profit, feeling bad about making too much profit, or that profit was kind of, I don't know, taking away somehow from the team. But in fact, I realized unless I made a profit, I was taking away from my team. So that was the big turning point for me, I think.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because what a profitable business means to the team is that they've got job security.
That's right.
It's just definitely, and that's a huge one. You know, that is definitely a massive one. And it also allows us to do, you know, we've got a closed Facebook page like lots of salons, and what's going through our Facebook page at the moment is actually quite funny, because it's planning the Christmas party. And, you know, all those ideas and all the fantastic, you know, getting in a giant Hummer and going up and cruises down the yard, they cost money.
Yeah.
So, and when we send them off to do education, it costs money. So, you know, a profitable business is a good business, and they feel proud to be part of that as well. Obviously, they have to be looked after too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
So it makes a big difference. One of the lessons that I learned very, very early, well, I shouldn't say very, very early on, we're talking 4 years in, but from my first coach, is I had to do a book report. And I had to do a book report on a book called The Richest Man in Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that one?
Yep, I have.
And I remember at that stage my husband, because my husband is actually not a hairdresser, he, about 7 years ago, I remember saying to him, you know, something's going to have to give here, and I need some help. So we made the big decision of Russell going back to school full time, and he did graphic art and web design, and came in and he looks after the administration side of our three businesses. So we work very, very closely together. And one of the things that, but at that stage I wasn't working with Russell, so he really, he didn't know anything about the finances of the business. He basically had his wage and I had mine. So I remember reading this book and ringing Russell one day, and I said to him, I've actually got this passbook account that I've opened, and I opened it about 6 months ago. And he said, oh, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, I just didn't want to tell you, but I've got this passbook account and I've saved $10,000. And he said, what do you mean? So, and I said, well, I just wanted to see if I could do it. So, and so it was actually a really big turning point for us as business, because when things would go wrong in the business, like the hot water would go or just something that was not expected, I would go into not sleeping at night time, and I hate it. So what that book taught me was, if you imagine, have I got time to tell the little story of the book?
Yes, please tell, please.
So if you imagine you're back in Babylon days and you're sitting at the dining room table, and at the end of the dining room table you're sitting and you've got a big pile of all the money that you have taken, so all your takings for the year. And you open up the door, and around the table comes somebody that represents your landlord, somebody that represents your staff, somebody that represents the electricity company, the tea, the coffee, you name it, everything that you actually pay out. And, of course, the product companies, because that's your second largest expense. So in they all come, and around the table everybody actually asks for their share of what's on your pile of money. So you just sit there and you hand it out and you hand it out and you hand it out. So at the end of the day they walk away, and then you look at the pile, and you either look at the pile and go, there's not much left, mm-hmm. or you look at the pile and go, there's nothing left. So depending on where you're at, but either way it actually doesn't make you feel very good. And what that book really taught me was, it's how you feel and how proud you are. So at that stage I then worked out, if I was to pay myself a wage, what would the wage look like? And it would be, it wasn't a ridiculous wage, it was what it was a hairdresser's wage.
Yeah.
So, and then the next thing was, did I, you know, if you are in business, you are, you're not just going to work and coming home, so you need profit. So the profit I then would take 10%. So that 10% I put into that bank account every week. And I used to love it, because I would actually walk, it was when cash was around a lot, I would walk with my cash in my bank book, and I would walk up to the bank, and so it was none of this internet transferring. It made me feel so good to actually physically put that into the bank and know that that was my safety net.
Yep. So really you're taking the stance of pay yourself first.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, yeah. I think that's a really important lesson, to pay yourself first, even when you're not feeling highly lucrative or that things aren't feeling fabulously. And it doesn't always have to be 10%, right? Whatever you can afford, but actually to put some aside.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know what? And it taught me good debt, bad debt, because at that stage I actually didn't have a credit card. And then after I'd saved that amount of money, I then realised that I needed to have one, but we've never paid... I've never paid interest, so it just turns it around. So that's actually been a really good thing. It was a good learning to learn how to handle money.
Yeah.
You know, because when you've got a team of people behind you, they're relying on you handling it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. To make sure they can turn up and have a job tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about your team, because we all know that managing a team is... well, for me, it comes up so often with the salon owners I work for as the most challenging thing. So tell me about managing your team.
Okay, so my team has, because of the education business, my team basically had to evolve over the years. And I probably made a call about 4 years ago where I decided, and it was a big decision, because at one stage we had 7 apprentices between the 2 salons, and now we actually don't have apprentices. So So I wouldn't say that it's anything that I'm proud of, but I couldn't give them the time that they needed. And it wasn't about the training, it was about everything else that went around it.
Yeah.
So we now have salon assistants that are ex-hairdressers.
Yeah.
And so we have, so there's 15 on my team. And I love all of them. So I've got, most of them have been with me for, Melissa's been there for 15, oh no, hang on, no, Melissa's been there, what am I saying? 12 years.
Don't age you.
I'm not trying not to do that. But, most of them have been there. Mel's been there for 14 years. So I've got a Mel and a Melissa. Anyway, so lots of them are there forever, which is really lovely. And I think I put that down to one of the things that, because you never can do everything right, but I put it down to that the first thing that I do when I actually do my one-on-ones with them is I ask them the same question every single time just before we start, and that is, what is your happy score? 1 out of 10. You know, 1 is I'm miserable, and 10 is I'm just loving my job. So, and my next question always is, if it's, you know, wherever, if it's not a 10, it's what do I need to do to make it a 10? Because I think when you've got a happy team, you know, your figures reflect your feelings.
For sure. For sure. So what do you think, it is that you do that helps your team have a 10 or more often have a 10? Like what's one thing that you do really, really well?
I think we keep communication open extremely well. I think being able to listen to them, you know, listening to what their, you know, what their thoughts are, because sometimes they're not so good, but, you know, it's how I have learned to handle that over the years.
Yeah.
But, you know, listening to what they need creatively as well as what they need personally is actually really important, because personally, you know, I care about every single one of them, or else they wouldn't be there. So I think making sure that we are helping each other along with what goes on outside of our working life is actually really important as well.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that, because, you know, we like to think that we keep our work and personal life separate, but, you know, it's such a personal type of industry. We're so connected with the people around us. We work so physically close to each other and with our clients. You can't help but let the two merge often, I think. And I would agree too, when you connect personally with your people and that you're invested in them as human beings, you're going to get better buy-in, right?
I think so, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I'm not saying, I certainly don't, you know, my social life is very, very, very completely different to their social lives, you know. So Christmas parties and, you know, mid-year birthday parties are, they're things that we love to get together and go to and catch up with as well. So I certainly am not catching up on the weekends. I think that would be a bit of a cross.
Yeah.
But it's nice to actually be able to communicate. And I think the closed Facebook page keeps us all connected as well, because there's some weeks that I'm just not there. I mean, last week I was in Sydney for the week, and the 2 weeks previous to that I was actually having a holiday for 2 weeks. So I haven't actually been into Zoom A for 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're connecting.
Yeah, I just honestly, I love the closed Facebook group because you can. So back in the day when we had our staff meetings, we'd send a follow-up email of all the key points and all the things that had happened. So everybody had, you know, you don't learn or hear everything the first time, right? So you want a follow-up of the agenda and the things we agreed. And also no one can say later, I missed that point or whatever. And we used to have to, my manager, Amy, used to add in little sneaky questions in amongst the email to ensure people read the email. Yeah. So she would ask little, you know, if you read this sentence, you'll tuck it into the middle of a sentence somewhere, come and get a secret prize off me or something or other. I'm just keeping it fun, right?
Yeah.
But the great thing with Facebook groups, and we, you know, moved to that a little bit later on, or using Messenger, is that you can see when people have read it or not. So you can't say, oh, well, I didn't note that, sorry. So yeah, I'm totally all about that. I think that's a great initiative for salons.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, it is terrific. When we do our team meetings as well, one of the things that I learned years ago is I don't just do a team meeting and, you know, interact with them. What we do is before we start every single team meeting, we have a piece of flip chart paper that's on the mirror.
Yeah.
And so we actually bullet point everything that we've actually all agreed on because,
yep.
You know, we call it our code of class, if you like. It's a code of honour. How do we play the game? How do we agree? Yeah. To look how to it. So they actually, every year, we will actually all write the policy and procedures together. So we go through it and if anything we need to change, it's their buy-in. It's their, you know.
For sure.
Important. But every time we do a team meeting, we actually bullet point it. It then goes and lives in the back room until the following meeting where we bring it back out again. We actually, before we start that meeting, we actually go over what we discussed the time before and just making sure that we're on track.
Love it. Perfect. Mm. Okay, tell us about brand building and working in or on your business.
So I think, you know, I always believe build a brand, you know, not an individual, but building a brand is actually a really important thing. Actually, in 2011, I was, it was probably one of my, you know, it was a really big aha moment year for me because at that stage, I don't enter into awards anymore for just time purposes, to be honest. I love watching that. But I did win Victorian Hairdresser of the Year in 2011, which was, you know, my creative side because I love hair. But the other award that I won was the Hair Expo Excellence in Salon Marketing. And I Tony Guy was in it, and I'm like, how does a little salon in Mornington beat the moguls of the amazing Tony and Guy? Because they're marketing amazing. And I think it came down to branding where we were and making us the experts in hair in our local area. And I say local big time because it's not about Australia wide, it's about the 5 kilometres around us.
Yeah, yeah. Very smart advice.
Yeah, so we do a lot of local community work. So we have wine festivals, the races, the local fashion parades, you know, making sure that we're actually perceived as being the local experts in hair, because you know we last year we celebrated our 25th anniversary in business on the peninsula, and I'm sure it's the same worldwide on how many salons open and then close their doors, and you know, we've managed to take the ups and the downs.
For sure. I really resonate with that, you know, being the experts in here or experts in something in your local area, and then being essentially what you're saying is being visible. You're visible in your local community and you're active in your local community, and that can mean face-to-face as well as social media, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Very much so.
So I think, you know, and it's I resonate with those words because it's part of my Turn Likes into Bookings program is talking about exactly that. Every salon does colour. Every salon does a cut in the blow wave. Every salon is a salon. So how do you stand out and become, how do you stand out from the crowd? Well, really become an expert in something and stand for something, because otherwise you stand for nothing and you're just in amongst the rat race. Yeah. So, I certainly – and then, of course, you can't sell a secret, so you need to be visible face-to-face as well as social media. So, great. Yeah. Good advice.
Very, very important. And you know what? Working on it all the time. And it's that's actually really, really important. At the moment, we've got our Queen of Referrals program happening at the moment. So, you know, which is in salon. So that is the reward for the Queen is they have $1,000 gift card to use in the salon. And obviously what we're doing is we're verbally asking them, because when you verbally ask for a referral, I think we all know that, you know, if you just hand somebody a card and do nothing about it, it's not going to work. Whereas we do a lot of role playing, which all hairdressers don't really love, let's face it, but it works, and we do have fun with it. And that has actually worked a treat. We've done that, I think we've done that for 5 years in a row at certain periods of the year, because, it is important.
Okay, so you ask the individual client face-to-face while they're in the chair for some referrals. Mm. And tell us a little bit about that. I think that's really intriguing.
Yeah, sure. So basically what we do is we actually explain to them. So we've got some artwork around the salon that explains it as well. So some beautiful, you know, we've got the pretty queen and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then the actual hairdresser then actually gives them the card and actually mentions to them about the time frame for the Queen of Referrals. And basically all it is they actually give it to a friend, and the friend actually has I think it's $20 off their first visit to the salon. And then, of course, when the person's actually referred them, we then actually reward them for each client with that $20. So it's, I think that's a fairly common thank you. And then from there, they actually go every referral that comes in, they actually are going into the draw. And the person that actually wins the Queen of Referrals has the most amount of referrals.
I love that. And then do you celebrate the Queen?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The Queen will be celebrated.
And she gets $1,000 of services in the salon. Yeah.
I have to tell you something else that's really working. Both of my salons are very different. One of my salons is a boutique salon.
Yeah.
And the other salon is in a shopping centre. So it's more of a, can I get a haircut, can I get a colour? They're very different. And as an educator, by the way, I've loved that, because I think I really can resonate with exactly who's in my class. They don't all go, oh, well, that's okay for you.
Yeah.
But I listened to one of your podcasts a few weeks ago and about the consistency, and it was and I'm so sorry, remind me the guy's name from the UK, the chocolate.
Oh yes. I can see his face.
That's terrible.
Sorry,
but I loved it. So I went out and I did my team meeting, and I was explaining to them about the chocolate idea. And can I tell you, they take this, we bought this beautiful basket, we put beautiful chocolates in it, and on any of the downtime in the shopping centre, because that salon is either absolutely you cannot move and it's like, how do you keep this place clean, or they have periods where there is no one there. So that has actually worked so well. So they've actually been out with their chocolate, and they've got their we've actually just used our rewards program. So our rewards program, I think everyone's heard that really it takes 3 visits for a client to be a regular client. Yes. So our rewards program has, in both salons, actually has three offers on this rewards program. And so they basically just took the rewards program out, because the first reward was, I think it gives them $10 off a cut and blow dry, or $20 off a colour. And for a shopping centre, that has actually worked amazing.
Yeah, okay. That's really awesome. Hey, it's Alan Austin Smith, by the way.
Yes, that's right. So Alan. Yeah, sorry, Alan. But very, very great words of wisdom. I really enjoyed that podcast.
Okay, those are great. Those are great ideas. And great to see some of those ideas from the podcast come to life. That's really cool. Yeah. That's why I love it, right? You know, it brings the world together and brings the community together, and we can share ideas. So
absolutely.
Makes me happy.
And I think what really also has been a big part of our education success, as well as the salon success is I'm not afraid to give things a go. You know, when you hear me, and don't take 10 years to get it out there.
Yeah.
Do it straight away. We did the chocolate. I listened to it that morning and on my way to the team meeting, and I walked into the team meeting and I went, guess what, guys? So we had an afternoon. So, you know, I think giving things a go, you know, some things work and some things don't. And I remember, I think it was Richard Branson that said, you know, somebody that does a good entrepreneur is someone that's not afraid to actually give things a go. Not everything will work, but at least you can make a decision.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, part of that is not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
Like if you went out there with the chocolates and it just totally bombed, it's like, okay, well, tomorrow we'll do something else.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, gosh, I've done lots of things that haven't actually worked as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right. Look, as we work towards wrapping up, I know that as an entrepreneur that you are, you know, we need inspiration to keep us going. So what's a quote or a mantra that keeps you alive?
I would say attitudes are contagious, is yours worth catching?
I like that. Tell us about that.
You know, I think attitude in everything that we do, and we all have times where we don't feel great. And I think that's exactly why, you know, 6 years ago I decided, to get the most out of my day and for my team to get the most out of me, you know, I need to look after me first. So my attitude is great. And when my attitude is great, everything around me actually works really well. And I think it's the same in a team environment. So it's the first page that you open after our company story in our policy and procedures manual, which is attitudes are contagious, is yours worth catching. And I always go through that with my team and say, have you ever worked or been around someone with a bad attitude? And the stories that come out of them is I love it because you're getting their buy-in as well.
For sure. For sure. We had a really great program. I've talked about it a bit, I'm sure, called Fish. And they had four points, I guess, and one of them was totally around attitude. And so we invested a lot of time in attitude and showing up. And choosing, it was actually called Choose Your Attitude, that's it. Because you can have a crap attitude before you walk in the door, but you have to consciously decide to especially as the business owner,
yes,
to choose your attitude, even if it's not what you feel really deep down inside, because it is catching. You walk in there doom and gloom, and the next minute a happy salon turns into a crappy salon.
And that's exactly right. And that's for all of us combined, you know. And even if we're working in the home office, you know, if it's just Russell and myself and we have Alex in the office as well, you know, walking into that office with a open mind, because sometimes things are so overwhelming, you go, I don't know where to start today. Like, where do I start?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Tell us about a book, webinar, podcast, or something that you've learned a lot from. You have mentioned one already. Tell us a bit more about that.
So definitely, I've got two books.
Okay, cool.
That I would say, The Richest Man of Babylon, I think for anyone to make sure that they really don't fly blind, they actually feel good about their business and know that you've actually got a future. You know, you don't have to go, well, I haven't got super and I haven't got this because I own my own business. Yeah. Definitely The Richest Man of Babylon. And the other one is Good to Great. I loved Good to Great and, Sticking in Your Three Circles. So they would be my two books.
Yeah, I've read that one too, actually. It's a great book.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put the links to both of those in the podcast show notes. So thank you for that. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great chat, actually, about lots of different things. And I know that plenty of people are going to hop off the podcast and go and put something in action.
Oh, good. Well, that's a great thing.
That's always what I want. Now, tell us a little bit more about where can people find your Global Styling webinar series?
So they're on our website. So it is www.lornaevanseducation.com.au. And they can also see a little video of our amazing, if you cut your blow drying down, we've actually created a new brush for stylists as well as for the consumer. And I have to say it's actually changed my life in blow drying. So you can see a little video on there as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I'll catch up with you next time I'm in Australia.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Alrighty. See ya.
See ya.
So there you have it. Wise words of wisdom from Lorna. Her and I have so much in common. I really enjoyed that chat. If having a successful, streamlined and systemized salon feels more like a daydream than your actual reality right now, I want to invite you to join the Salon Owners Collective Hub. It has everything you need and nothing that you don't to help you fast track your business success so you can have that fully booked out salon, grow and retain a team of rock stars and earn more for you, all while leaving plenty in the tank for you and some space for your loved ones. So come and join me at the Salon Owners Collective Hub. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Salon Owners Collective Podcast. Tune in each week as we reveal the latest insight and advice on what it takes to make your salon a success today. Subscribe to the Salon Owners Collective Podcast on iTunes or visit us online at salonownerscollective.com for answers to your common questions, to follow Larissa and much more. Thanks for listening. See you next time.